WWE was live in St. Louis tonight for what they said could quite possibly be the final match ever between John Cena and Randy Orton. 31 world championships between these two men. They had their very first match in 2001 before they were even in WWE. This has been a long, as WWE would say, a storied rivalry between these two. They want you so badly to believe this has been just an all-time classic feud. Whatever you think of these two, wherever you think this feud falls in the history books of great feuds in WWE history, it was never one of my favorites. But I didn't know what to expect tonight because it was really all about the crowd in St. Louis. They were in Randy Orton's hometown. You cannot pick a better place to have heel John Cena defend his championship against Randy Orton. And I said coming into the show, it was all going to come down to this crowd. This crowd, are they going to will this match into an all-time classic? Is that enough to carry this match? Because what we have seen from John Cena over the last several years, and in particular even this year, since he won the championship and came back to WWE, is a John Cena that is very different in-ring from the one that we saw many years ago in those earlier matches with Randy Orton. This is a John Cena that has a ceiling to what he can do. That much is clear. So a lot of the heavy lifting would have to be done by Randy Orton in this match. And they went out there tonight, and they had a main event that I will say, and I already saw some of the comments earlier in the chat, and I agree that the main event tonight was better than the main event that we got on night two of WrestleMania. And that should never happen, by the way. But that is indeed what we got tonight. We got, and I know it's a low bar to set. Okay, we talked about how awful that main event was on night two at WrestleMania, so it's a low bar, but easily eclipsed the John Cena-Cody Rhodes match at WrestleMania. So that's number one. But these two went out there, and they delivered a match that was very early TNA-rific. So much so, especially with the overbooking on the ref bumps, that I am sure Jeff Jarrett, if he wasn't watching this match live tonight, when he does go back and watches this match, he will be standing up out of his chair and applauding both men. My God, I lost track of how many, between ref bumps, RKOs, attitude adjustments, it was out of control in that main event. But think about it. If you have someone in John Cena, and even Orton, Orton is older now, but Orton works a very smart match. You know, he picks his spots. He's methodical, but like, he's Randy Orton, you know, so you expect it. It's his style. But he knows just when to strike and just when to move and do things in the ring. That's what makes him so great. With John Cena, like I said, he's limited. So what do you do in a situation like this when you have two guys going out there and they have 30 minutes? Because this main event tonight went on right at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. Yeah, some people forget there's a UFC pay-per-view on right now. They had a UFC pay-per-view on at 10 p.m., so they probably wanted this show done before UFC went live. If you're wondering, well, how come this show was so short? They didn't go past the top of the hour. That's why. I don't know why some people are so surprised about this. I've been mentioning this now for weeks. But they went out there. It was 9 o'clock. And I said, man, they're going to give these guys a lot of time. So, of course, the entrances got a lot of time. And they really milked the reaction from Orton's hometown. He got a great reception. But this is exactly what the match needed. They needed the smoke and mirrors. They needed the bells and whistles, because what else are you going to get out of these two if they have 25 to 30 minutes to go out there and put on a main event? So thank God we got the things that we got in the main event tonight, because if we didn't, I think I would be sitting here right now doing a very different review. Think back to the Royal Rumble. What was it? 2014, I think it was, and the match these two had. So it needed that. It needed all of that. And in the end, what we got was actually the best possible John Cena-Randy Orton match that you could expect at this stage of the game. Honestly, I don't think that match could have gone any better for a John Cena-Randy Orton match in 2025 than it did tonight. It was exactly what it needed to be. Did I need all of the ref bumps, and did they go overboard with it? Sure. And I think that your kind of overview of this main event is, or maybe of the entire event, top to bottom, maybe colored very much by what you thought of the overbooking in that main event. If you didn't like it, if you weren't a fan of it, you're probably not a fan overall of the show. But if you really loved the main event, because that's really what the show was built around, your opinion of the show is probably very different. I'm more in the middle, trending up, than I am, you know, thinking that this show was no good or this show was garbage. The show was not garbage. But was it a show that when it was over, I sat here and felt like, man, that was an excellent show. Man, Backlash was this huge show. No, I didn't come away from it feeling that way. I look at it like this. You know, this show had five matches on it. And this is part of the Triple H formula, generally speaking, on these, you know, non-WrestleMania type shows. He likes to keep it to about five, sometimes six, but usually five matches. And looking at the card on paper, you had John Cena and Randy Orton in the main event, right? Which was a crapshoot. But then you had Gunther and Pat McAfee. McAfee is not a wrestler, right? Just because he's wrestled doesn't mean he's a wrestler. But it's Gunther. So you knew whatever the layout of the match was going to be, they were going to find a way to make it work. Dominic Mysterio and Penta for the Intercontinental title. How could that be a bad match, right? Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria. We've seen them work before. They've had a very good match before. And then a fatal four-way for the United States Championship, which I think actually turned out to probably be the best thing on the entire show, but we'll get into everything here in a second. But as far as Cena and Orton are concerned, I do wonder if John Cena is just going to go around for the rest of the year until we get the inevitable babyface turn, kicking everybody in the dick until he drops the championship. That seems to be the play here. He kicked Cody Rhodes in the dick twice. He kicked Randy Orton in the dick. Who's next? You would hope that whoever is next is smart enough to be wearing protection. But I said that years ago when AJ Styles was getting kicked in the dick all the time and Brock Lesnar was getting kicked in the dick by The Undertaker every other week. Nobody ever seems to learn their lessons, so I guess why should it be any different today? But one thing that was interesting, actually the most interesting part of that main event, is something that did not even happen on the show. It happened when they went off the air, because this was the first time that we got John Cena expressing some form of I don't know if you would call it remorse or regret over his actions, over the things that he has said to the fans, over the way that he has behaved, the way that he won this match tonight, because of course he won. You knew he wasn't going to lose. But it was that little bit of storytelling that did not take place during the actual Backlash show, but I think was the planting of that initial seed for what we all know is coming. We don't know when. We don't know how many more months we're going to have to suffer through the crotch attacks. But we know that at some point John Cena will go back to the good side, because John Cena is not going to retire as a heel. And so whenever that may be, we got our first little hint, I think, of John Cena maybe having second thoughts. And I'll talk more about that when we get to the main event. That, to me, was the most interesting part of the show, and it wasn't even on the actual show. But yes, John Cena is still the WWE champion coming out of Backlash. I know, everybody, Slow King says, everybody getting kicked in the balls. Nobody is safe. Nobody is safe. You know, you would think that Nick Aldis might have a little something to say to Randy Orton. He ate his third RKO tonight. At what point does the general manager do something about this? That's the third time in the last few years that he has been dropped by Randy Orton. I guess maybe Orton will have to write another check after tonight. Bigger question now is, where do we go from here? I mean, they're talking about this being the final match between John Cena and Randy Orton. I'm not so sure about that. But I mentioned Gunther and Pat McAfee. This was the match I was actually looking forward to more than any other single match on this show, believe it or not. Because I think they've done a very good job, actually, of building this thing up. I thought those promos, those go-home promos on Monday night from Pat and from Gunther were excellent. And it got me very interested to see, how is this match going to go? Because you don't want them to overstay their welcome with it. But at the same time, if it's the most anticipated match, or it was for me anyway, on the show, I don't necessarily want it to be over in 2 minutes or 3 minutes, because that's no good. But they also shouldn't be going 15 or 20 minutes. And what we got from them was exactly what it needed to be. Did it go a little longer than it had to? Yes, I think it did. But it was exactly what it needed to be between those two. We had the Women's Intercontinental Championship. That may have been the biggest surprise of the entire night for me. I thought for sure Becky Lynch was coming out of the show with gold, and in fact, she did not. Lyra Valkyria, not only is she still the Intercontinental Champion, Lyra Valkyria had what may have been the defining match. I won't even say may have had. She just had the defining match of her main roster run, if not her entire career, in WWE against Becky Lynch. And that issue was obviously not over yet, but that was, for me, the big surprise of the night. We also had another surprise in the debut of a new star. We had the debut of Jeff Cobb, who has been talked about quite a bit over the last several weeks, leaving New Japan Pro Wrestling. Where is he going to go? All the talk was focused on WWE and not AEW. He has worked for AEW before, but he reportedly was leaning towards WWE or had already signed maybe with WWE. Fightful, I believe, were the first ones weeks ago who had that report that his name was spotted on the internal roster in WWE. And some people laughed it off. Well, what does that mean? He's not even there yet. Why would his name be listed internally? Well, guess who's there now? Jeff Cobb. I saw a report from PW Insider. Apparently, Jeff Cobb took somewhere either 4 or 5 different flights from Japan all the way to St. Louis from yesterday to today to make sure that he got to the show. Now, that's dedication. 5 flights in 2 days just to make sure that he would get to the show on time. So did they not like reach out to him until very late in the game to say, hey, we got an idea for this show. We need you in St. Louis. You would think they'd give him a little bit more of a heads up on that. That sounds like a fucking nightmare. I went from New York at 5 o'clock in the morning to Atlanta with a layover to go from Atlanta to Chicago just to get to the House of Glory show last night. And now I feel like a fucking idiot here. I hear about Jeff Cobb. He's going from Japan to the U.S. He's on fucking 5 different planes. But there he was in St. Louis and actually got a pretty good reaction. There were certainly a number of people in that building who knew exactly who he was, even though he has never been in WWE before. What did he do? Why is he there? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about this entire show. I, on the whole, think that the matches, as far as like the in-ring, the opening match, the women's intercontinental match, and honestly, I could go either way as far as the Fatal 4-Way or the women's match as the best match on the entire show, because that women's match was excellent. I just tend to lean towards the 4-Way. I don't know. The crowd was very hot for the opening match, and it was all action, and I just thought it was fun. But if you were to tell me that you thought Becky and Lyra had the best match on the show, I would not disagree with you. It was the only women's match on the show, and it was probably the best thing on the show. So I enjoyed it overall. It did not feel like a terribly important show. It really did feel like, okay, we have to do a show, and so let's come up with a card. On paper, it was far from the strongest card that WWE has put together. When you go into a show with low expectations, a lot of times what ends up happening is when you keep your expectations low, you at least meet those expectations and probably exceed them a little bit. To me, that was Backlash. That's how I would describe Backlash tonight. We'll talk about the entire show here from top to bottom. This is your WWE Backlash 2025 review. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for joining me here live on a Saturday night. Hey, we got to talk about R-Truth as well. I was talking about R-Truth last week, possibly having involvement in that main event. He was out there too. We'll talk about what he did. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. I appreciate all the support that you throw my way here on the channel. We have a bonus little goal, super chat goal going on in the chat. But if we hit 400 likes minimum, we will do our Be the Booker segment a little bit later on here at the end of the stream. So get going on that. That's your homework for the next hour and a half or so. We'll see where we are at that point. So hit that like button. And of course, I will be reading all of your messages as we go along here. See, the chat is popping off. They opened the show with the Fatal 4-Way for the United States Championship. Jacob Fatu defending his U.S. title against L.A. Knight, Damian Priest, and Drew McIntyre. And I'm going to have an update on Drew McIntyre here in a little bit as well. McIntyre said that, if you saw SmackDown last night, and I did catch up on SmackDown after I got home very quickly. I just kind of breezed through it because I wasn't here last night. But McIntyre said it best on SmackDown. that this should have been one-on-one. Drew McIntyre really did. He got screwed again. Because as he pointed out on SmackDown, LA Knight lost at WrestleMania. Damian Priest lost at WrestleMania. Drew McIntyre, not only did he win at WrestleMania, but he beat LA Knight in a number one contenders match on SmackDown a few weeks ago. And somehow, this ends up being a fatal four-way. I'm on McIntyre's side. The man got jobbed here. He's right. He's one of those heels that what he says makes a lot of sense, and he's right. He gets booed, but he's right. So anyway, he was looking to become a Grand Slam champion here in this match. He was the first one out, and Knight got a monster pop. And part of it maybe was like people were just excited the show was starting, but also he's still over. So he comes out, he gets a monster pop. Jacob Fatu, though, despite that. Jacob Fatu, the clear fan favorite here in this match.
Row, row, Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
Hey, David is here. David
row,
Theory.
Row, row, Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
Roman was not on the Backlash card. Roman is on vacation. I don't think we're going to see Roman again, certainly not on a PLE, until the next one. I do believe he will be a Money in the Bank, but we're not going to see him for a little while. But with Punk being back, I think it's only a matter of time before we see Roman back on SmackDown in the next few weeks. But the reactions for Jacob Fatu, they get louder and louder with each passing week. So even though he really is still technically a heel, the fans are dictating that they want him to be the chosen one. Big things are in this man's future. All you have to do is listen. Put your ear to the door. Cup your ear, brother, and just listen. And it gets louder and louder and louder each week. So Priest and Knight, they teamed up for a high-low style move on Fatu. McIntyre went on a whole run of offense, doling out neck breakers to everybody. He kipped up. He went for a claymore to Fatu, but he got cut off by LA Knight. Priest then went on a run of his own. The crowd chanted, "We want tables." He also threw a clothesline at McIntyre that sent him over the top rope to the floor. There was a spot here where Priest came charging in towards Fatu. He was outside, and Fatu scooped him up and gave him a Samoan drop on the top part of the timekeeper's barricade. Just planted him, boom, right on top. And then Fatu looks, and he locks eyes with McIntyre. Now, McIntyre was also outside the ring, but he was on the opposite side. But they lock eyes. And then they slowly, on either side, make their way into the ring. Now we have a stare down between them in the ring. And they started exchanging fire. Fatu put McIntyre down with a pop-up Samoan drop, followed that with a running hip attack. And then Fatu went up top, got cut off, though, by Drew, who gouged at Fatu's eyes. McIntyre joined Fatu on the ropes. Here comes LA Knight, though, to trip up McIntyre. And now he's upside down in a tree of woe. And Knight goes up top, but he got headbutted back down to the ring by Fatu. McIntyre now, he powers himself up, upright, and he pulls Fatu off the ropes with a suplex. But in so doing, Fatu lands on Knight. Then he shoots right back up, and he hits McIntyre, and then dives out onto Priest at ringside. The fans went crazy for this. He went on a run of offense here. That again, like these people were losing their minds, and they were going crazy for Jacob Fatu. So Fatu returns to the ring, hits a Swanton Bomb on McIntyre, but then Knight drops Fatu with a BFT. But there was Damian Priest. He puts Knight down with a South of Heaven chokeslam. But then McIntyre, he takes down Priest with a claymore kick. Priest, though, fell on top of Knight and would have had the match won had McIntyre not been there to break up the pin. So McIntyre hit Future Shock DDTs on Fatu and on LA Knight. Then he counted down, he drilled Knight with a claymore kick, and he had him beat. He had that Grand Slam title. It was within his grasp, but Priest, at the very last possible second, pulls the referee out to the floor and breaks the count. Michael Cole said that Priest just screwed McIntyre out of another championship. Another screw job for Drew McIntyre. This guy gets screwed more than a porn star. So, Michael Cole, after making mention of that, we see Priest and McIntyre fighting into the timekeeper's area. They crashed and burned on the concrete floor. In the ring, Fatu went for the double jump moonsault that Knight was able to avoid. Knight went to the ropes. He did his double jump into an elbow onto a standing Fatu. Then he went and did it again, this time to him. He was laying down this time. And he hit the elbow, covered him, only got an ear fall. So now they cut back to Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest. Now they're in the crowd, and they are brawling on top of a couple of equipment cases. Priest then delivers a South of Heaven chokeslam that sends both men crashing through two tables down below. It was a hell of a spot. And that was the last we saw of them in this match. Both men were out. Officials came out, actually medics, to check on them. You know, this reminded me of this very similar, in a very similar spot in the Damian Priest Bad Bunny street fight 2 years ago in Puerto Rico at Backlash. Priest gave him a falcon arrow off some of the equipment cases through tables down below. Same kind of spot. And that was a spectacular spot. And so was this, because they were pretty high up there when they did this. So medics are out there to check on both men. Now, I mentioned that I would have an update on Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre. As far as I know, Priest is okay. McIntyre, according to Mike Johnson on PW Insider, apparently his head missed the table. So as hellacious as that bump looked, it sounds like his head may have smacked the ground. And he was being checked on. I don't know if they fear a concussion. Maybe it turns out he's okay. But they were concerned enough that he's being checked out. Apparently that's all we know right now, but yeah, that was not good. If his head missed the table and hit the floor with that kind of impact, that's not good. So back at ringside, Priest ran Fatu into the ring post and then slammed his head on the announce desk. Knight lays Fatu. He places him on top of the announce desk. And LA Knight is teasing his own elbow drop from the top rope onto the announce desk. Now, we've seen people do this before. We've seen Shane McMahon do this before. We've seen Logan Paul. Logan Paul makes it look easy. And he gets some distance on his. LA Knight was far enough away, or at least from the way they shot this with the camera. I don't know why. It just looked farther away than maybe it normally would be. There is no way that he would have cleared that announce desk. There's just no way. But we'll never know. Because Solo Sikoa came out. I don't know where he came from, the crowd, I guess. And he pulled Jacob Fatu off the table to safety. Knight went after Solo when he got punched by a man on the other side of the timekeeper's barricade who reached over and punched him right in the face. And we couldn't tell at first who this person was, but it turns out that it was Jeff Cobb, making his WWE debut, fresh off the New Japan roster, fresh from Japan. Apparently very fresh from Japan, as in yesterday. And there he is. Now, at first, we didn't really have a great look at his face. And it took a few seconds. So the crowd didn't really react that much. Like, they could tell somebody was there and they attacked LA Knight. But when they got that close-up shot of his face, he got a hell of a pop from the crowd. So whether there were that many people who really did recognize him and knew who he was, or it was just a very vocal minority of people in the building, he got a nice pop for his first appearance. And really, if you're just a WWE fan and you live a very sheltered life and you don't really watch any other wrestling, but even if you do, if you watch TNA, maybe this new partnership between them, right, gets you watching TNA for the first time. If you watch AEW even, I mean, because he's wrestled in AEW before, but not very often, like, you really shouldn't know who this man is. But there were enough people who did. So that was kind of unexpected, to be honest with you. Michael Cole did identify him by his name. He said, that's one of the biggest free agents on the planet. That's Jeff Cobb. Well, he was a free agent. Obviously, he is no longer a free agent. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. If you've ever browsed in incognito mode in Google Chrome, you may incorrectly believe that you're browsing in secret. But incognito is not as incognito as you may think. Only a couple of years ago, Google settled a $5 billion lawsuit. That's billion with a B, after being accused of secretly tracking users in incognito mode. And their defense? Incognito does not mean invisible. In fact, all of your online activity is still 100% visible to a ton of third parties. That is, unless you use ExpressVPN. Without it, these third parties can still see every website you visit, even in incognito mode. That includes your internet service provider. They can see it. Your mobile network provider, they can too. Even the folks administering your Wi-Fi network at work or at school, even in your own house. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers, so third parties can't see your browsing history. So you can tell your boss or your teacher or even dear old mom and dad to buzz off. ExpressVPN is the best VPN because it hides your IP address, which is a unique identifier that everybody has on their computer. That makes it extremely difficult for third parties to track what you're doing online. It's also easy to use. You just tap that app to open it and click one button to get protected. It'll work on all of your devices too, including your laptop, your phone, and your tablet, so you can stay private even when you're on the go. There's a reason ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I just got back from Chicago, and I'm headed back out there again this weekend. And I'll be sure to keep ExpressVPN open on my phone while I'm away from home. I'm not taking any chances when it comes to my personal data. That's one of the reasons it's so appealing to me. And when they approached me to talk about it, I said, hell yeah, a service that actually works, and I could talk about from personal experience. Hell, I'm still using it every week to connect to a Canadian server whenever I watch Monday Night Raw on Netflix, so I can see all of the segments that happen during the commercial breaks. That's another neat benefit of using ExpressVPN. And don't forget, they have another European tour coming up, WWE does, in a few months. I'm just saying. Now's as good a time as any to give it a try if you haven't yet. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, and you can get an extra 4 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. So Fatu recovered, and he seemed very surprised and very confused by Cobb's involvement. Solo stepped aside as if to say, okay, go ahead, finish the job. Get in the ring and take care of business. And Fatu took his time. It was like a good, I felt like 10, 15 seconds. He's standing there, and he just has this look on his face. I don't know if it's confusion. I don't know if it's mistrust. But clearly he was not clued in about what was happening here. But then he did just that. He got into the ring, and he hit the mighty moonsault, and he pinned LA Knight to retain the championship. After the match, Fatu looked at Solo. He looked at Cobb at ringside. And then he walked between them, and he headed to the back. He walked right past them by himself. He didn't leave with them. But he was looking back like, again, he either just didn't know what was going on. I mean, I don't know if the story is that, like, who is this guy? Like, he doesn't know who he is. Maybe that's going to be the story. Or it could just be that he knows exactly who he is, and he doesn't trust him. And Solo didn't clue him in that he was going to be here, and he was going to be part of the Bloodline, which evidently it looks like Jeff Cobb is going to be part of the Bloodline here. The Bloodline will never die. I've told this to you before. The Bloodline will never die, and that's just with Samoans from the actual Bloodline. It will never die. You start incorporating all of the non-blood members of that family and forget about it. The Bloodline can continue on infinitely for decades. It will never end. It will never die. Just when you think things are kind of winding down a little bit, it just bubbles right back up again. Now, I don't think Cobb is of Samoan descent. To my knowledge, I don't think there's any connection, familial connection there at all whatsoever. But then again, there isn't with Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa either. I mean, I know that they're friendly with the family and they consider them like brothers and members of the family, but they're not. So it's not as if we haven't had Bloodline members other than Sami Zayn in the past who were not technically part of the Bloodline. They kind of broke that seal a long time ago. They can pretty much add anybody they want to at this point. Seriously, they could add El Grande Americano to the Bloodline if they want to. At this point, it doesn't really matter. But Jeff Cobb has found a role now in Solo's Bloodline. I'm wondering, especially if Cobb had to travel in last minute like that, if that story is accurate, it makes me think Tama Tonga is injured. I don't know what the injury is, but he's going to be out for a while. Tonga Loa is already injured. And so they need members. If they weren't planning on just ending the Bloodline, which clearly they're not going to do that, they need members because they lost Tama and they lost Tonga Loa. Was it a case where we need guys. We need bodies in this group. Solo needs somebody. We have to add somebody in this story as we continue the slow burn as far as Jacob and Solo, because eventually Jacob will either be kicked out or he'll break away. But we need somebody, and so let's put Cobb in there. And that's why they came up with the idea to put Jeff Cobb in the Bloodline. That's where my head is at on this, just because they lost guys, and now they need to replace those guys with somebody else. But, you know, if that's the case, poor Hikuleo. Hikuleo is in shambles right now. And that Lance Anoa'i guy, I mean, he may not make it. So, isn't that right, Dave? But I thought this was a very good opener, a very hot crowd for it, a lot of action. And it was an impactful debut for Jeff Cobb. You know, they found a way that, you know, is fairly significant. He's being interjected here into a pretty prominent, I would say, middle of the card storyline right now with what's going on with Jacob and Solo. But it's a good spot, you know, for Cobb to be in instead of him just coming in and just kind of having a Rusev debut where, you know, he just shows up and he's just on his own. Nobody really knows who he is. At least Rusev had the benefit of, you know, having had all those years in the company before, people knew who he was. Obviously, in St. Louis, there were a lot of people who knew who Cobb was, but the wider WWE audience is going to have to be educated about who this guy is. And they'll do that, as they've done with Fatu. They'll do that on TV. But very good opener. I enjoyed this. If this wasn't the best thing on the show, bell to bell, it was the second best thing on the show, bell to bell. But also, I have to point this out. The U.S. title scene on SmackDown all of a sudden is really cooking because you've got Jacob with the title. L.A. Knight has lost a whole bunch of times now. I don't know what the plan is for him, but you got L.A. Knight, Drew McIntyre, Damian Priest. You've got, you know, obviously you've got the members of the Bloodline, the other members now, Cobb and Solo. And at some point, as things begin to break down, you know, might we see one of them challenge for the U.S. championship? And there are other people as well who can be brought, you know, into the U.S. title scene as well. Aleister Black just debuted. Carmelo Hayes, if they want to ever give him a serious push. So, you know, the U.S. title picture right now is looking a lot stronger than the Intercontinental title picture is on Raw. Hopefully that can continue. But up next, speaking of championships, we had Becky Lynch challenging Lyra Valkyria for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Chris wants to know, where is Hikuleo? I don't know. You know, when you find out, let me know. Nobody seems to know. Nobody really seems to have any idea where Hikuleo is. He's being hidden away.
Off is a direction you can fuck.
And that's what I was told when I contacted WWE to ask about Hikuleo. The Rock literally picked up the phone and told me that off is the direction that I can fuck. And then he tried to sell me some Papa Tui. Yo, before I move on here, the other thing about Jeff Cobb I should probably mention is I first began watching his work when I was watching Lucha Underground. He wasn't Jeff Cobb in Lucha Underground. He played the character Matanza Cueto. And he was a masked star on the show, but he was awesome. Former Lucha Underground champion. And so that was my first exposure to him. Now Cobb is not a big guy as in tall, you know. He's got a very interesting build to him. A little unorthodox. So Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria. Lynch and Valkyria, they opened, they had a little shoving match. And Valkyria trapped Lynch in a swinging pendulum submission, which was kind of cool. And then from that, she transitioned into a surfboard stretch submission to maintain control. Remember what Lyra said on Raw in her promo? She said, "I'm a better wrestler than you." So this was Lyra showing Becky, look at all the things that I can do that you can't. So Lynch gained control, though, after a while, took Lyra to ringside, and she held Lyra's face up while she was taunting what I thought was a fan. I'm just going to be honest with you. What I thought was a fan in the front row. And I would have never known, had Michael Cole not told me, that that was Lyra's fiance. Or what was it? What did Elaine say on that one episode of Seinfeld? My fiance. I've lost my fiance. Well, he was right there in the front row. And I was like, wow, okay. And then, you know, I'm looking on social media, and of course, people are just mocking this guy. And I had no idea that he is a wrestler. He is a wrestler. He's in he wrestles, I believe, over in Ireland or wherever. I don't know where he's wrestling these days, but yes, he is a wrestler. He doesn't just look like a random fan in the crowd. I don't know what promotions he currently wrestles for, but he is a wrestler. So the more you know. So back in the ring, Valkyria rallied with a fisherman suplex. Then came a superplex for a near fall. Valkyria rolled Becky into a pin, only for two. Becky reversed it, and the referee caught Becky holding the ropes for leverage while she was going for the pin. I was like, oh, come on now. I thought they might do a title change off a lame finish like that. Thankfully, they didn't. So Valkyria then jumped from the ropes and hit a leg drop to the back of Becky's neck. Then she went for a moonsault, but Becky got her knees up. And they traded strikes in the middle of the ring. Becky took Lyra down and went for the disarm her. Valkyria, though, escaped and put Becky in an armbar. Becky rolled onto Valkyria into a pinning position to break the hold. Becky applied the disarm her. Valkyria did the same thing and rolled her into a pinning predicament. Was able to get out of that. Moments later, Becky hit a manhandle slam, only for a near fall. And this woman was shocked. She was shook. She thought that was it. But Lyra kicked out. So Becky went to ringside. She grabbed a chair from the timekeeper's area, and then she got back into the ring with it. Jessica Carr was the referee, and so she sees this. And she immediately takes the chair away from Becky. So while the referee is getting rid of the chair, Becky goes and unties one of the top turnbuckle pads. So then she goes and hits another manhandle slam, and then again only gets a near fall. So now Becky is pitching a fit. She tries to run Lyra into the exposed turnbuckle. The referee got in the way and then went out to the floor to retrieve the turnbuckle pad because it was so important here that at this very moment, as it feels like we're about to hit the pinnacle, the peak of this match here, I must go outside so that I can tie this turnbuckle pad to cover up the steel. So she goes and gets the turnbuckle pad. While she is trying to put the pad back on, Lyra, of course, gets Becky up for her Nightwing finish. And she drops her. And those first few very precious seconds, there's no referee. Jessica turns around. She sees the pin. Ah, shit. She throws the turnbuckle pad down, goes to count the fall. Becky kicks out. So Becky stuffed another Nightwing attempt. Then she thumbed her in the eye. And I'm not sure if she thumbed her in the eye or maybe she got her on the bridge of the nose, because from that moment forward, Lyra was favoring her nose the entire time. But at that point, both women traded roll-up attempts. Only Lyra's was successful. And she pins Becky, and she retains the Intercontinental title. So Lyra was holding her nose even after the match was over. And I didn't see any blood or anything like that, but clearly, you know, she got bopped in the nose. I don't know, again, how bad it was. It could have just been selling, but what was weird about it is that when the match was over, Becky freaked out. And she locked her in the armbar. And she's wrenching on Lyra's arm. And Lyra isn't screaming. She's not really doing anything to sell the arm. Even in like the immediate aftermath, once the officials come out, they finally get Becky to get off of her. She's not selling the arm so much as she's selling the nose. She's still holding her nose. So it didn't really even make any sense unless she really did get hit in the nose. So Michael Cole on commentary said that she may have broken her nose. I don't know about that, but she was definitely favoring it. We were 2 for 2 so far at this point in the show. First match was very good. This was also very good. I would even say excellent. They had an excellent match, a surprising finish, because I really did think we were going to get a title change here. Surprised, but not disappointed. I don't mind that it went the other way. I think it was a very strong match and a very strong showing, you know, for both women, but especially for Lyra. Becky is the established name on this roster. We know what her resume looks like. We know she can go out there and have great matches because she's had great matches before with Lyra in NXT. But with Lyra and with Trish and with Charlotte, I mean, you can fucking Sasha going all the way back to the NXT days. You want to run down the list of great Becky Lynch matches. We know what this woman can do, especially with the right opponent. So Lyra is the one who has been really unproven so far on the main roster. You can see how talented she is. You can tell the company thinks a lot of her, and they think very highly of her. They called her up last year, And right before Becky left and went away and retired for that roughly 1 year period, she was trying to give Lyra the rub, right? They kind of were associating on television together. You could tell that this company really sees something in Lyra. We just haven't had the chance to really see her come out of her shell yet. Monday was the first time where I really watched her and I said, okay, this feels different. We're seeing a personality shift. We're seeing a side of her in her promo when they were going back and forth that we haven't seen from her yet. Like that promo that she cut on Becky on Monday was different than any other promo we've heard her give on television since the day she debuted. And that's maybe the biggest thing about this feud so far. It's been brief. But so far, it has allowed Lyra, I think, to show a side of herself that we just haven't been able to see before. So she can talk. She can work her ass off. And I just think that all around, and on top of that, she fucking won, which is even better. Because I could be sitting here telling you, well, you know, she lost. But even in defeat, she looked good and she got this and that. And that's all well and good, but she fucking won, which is even better. So I really did. I enjoyed this match a great deal. The other thing I would also mention is that just because Becky did not win the championship here does not mean that she is still not going to win the championship. This is not over. This is not the end of this, especially based on what they did here in the post-match. I am thinking we get a rematch at Saturday night's main event in a few weeks. I do think Becky is going to end up winning that belt. The only thing that might change my mind is Bayley is the wild card here. So when Bayley comes back, we already know Bayley is going after one person. She's going after Becky. The only question is, does she go after Becky wins the title? Or does she go after Becky and effectively cost Becky the title? And she never wins it. And then Becky goes off to feud with Bayley. That's the only thing I'm not sure of. But this is what I was talking about before. Even by Becky and Lyra, just by virtue of them working this match, the reason I have said that I have no issue with Becky winning the Intercontinental Championship, especially because in the end, Lyra's just going to win it back from her anyway. It helps the championship if it is on a bigger name, because so far they've done, I think, a relatively poor job of really establishing both of these mid-card women's championships. So I look at it almost as a necessity at this point. But even if she doesn't win it, look at what we got tonight. Do you realize, a little factoid for you, in all the months that this women's intercontinental title has been a thing, okay, and this goes back to January, the beginning of the year, this is the first time that this championship has been contested on a PLE. And you know why that happened? Because Becky Lynch was in the match. And if Becky Lynch was not in the match, this fucking match would not have been on this show. They didn't even get a title defense at WrestleMania. But it took a bigger name being involved to put a greater spotlight on this match. And that was the point that I was getting at. So surprised, but not disappointed to see Lyra get the win here. Saturday night's main event. That's what I'm thinking. That's when we get the rematch. Now, from one IC title, we go to another. We had Dominic Mysterio defending the Intercontinental Championship against Penta. And this is where the streak ended. I said we were 2 for 2. This is where the streak ended. And I don't say that to say that this match was not good. The match was bad. It wasn't a bad match. I'm not saying that at all. But this was not at the level of the first two matches. This really did feel like a Raw match, especially with the finish they did. Penta hit an early backstabber. Dom then crotched him on the top rope and knocked him to the floor. And this right here was one of the two best parts of the entire match. Dom follows with a suicide dive into a DDT on the floor. I've never seen him do this before. He's adding moves. He's adding new moves to his arsenal. So that was cool. Later on, Penta hit a crossbody block onto Dom on the floor from the top of, not even the top rope, but the top of the ring post casing. And he dove out onto him. Back inside, Penta blocked the Three Amigos and then avoided a 619 attempt. Penta used a crucifix pin to get a two count. Dom came back with Liv Morgan's Oblivion finish and did not do it justice because he did not win with it. But then he came back with a Mexican Destroyer to Dom on the fucking apron. And then they both tumbled and fell to the floor. So that was the cue for Carlito to walk out and run distraction with the referee. Meanwhile, JD McDonagh and Finn Balor, they hop over the barricade out of the crowd. Referee does not see them yet. And McDonough is holding Penta. And Balor has a clear shot at him. And he goes, no, wait. Hold on. I'm going to get a chair. So he goes over to the timekeeper's area and he retrieves the chair. But he has now wasted so many precious seconds that by the time he turns around and comes back over, the referee has turned around and the referee now spots them on the outside of the ring. So Penta then dives over the referee because he ends up in the ring. He dives over the referee and hits a flip dive out onto Carlito and McDonough. Balor climbs up on the apron, argues with the referee while Penta is on the ropes. And so now the referee is being distracted. And while this is going on, we had someone else show up at ringside here for this match. The brand new Speed Champion, fresh off of his Cinco de Mayo win. Yes, El Grande Americano makes an appearance here. And he climbs up the ropes and he headbutts Penta off the ropes with the loaded mask. Penta is knocked out. He falls backwards to the mat. Dom goes up. He hits a frog splash and he pins Penta to retain. So we got the usual Judgment Day bullshit at the finish. I mean, it's like a requisite every single fucking match with this stuff. Here comes Carlito. Here comes Dom. Here comes we see it every week. So we got the usual Judgment Day interference here, but you had to know that it was coming. I'm not saying that that makes it good. It sucks, but you had to know it was coming because what did you think? Dom just won the title at WrestleMania. He wasn't losing this title. But did you honestly believe that Dominic Mysterio was going to go in there and beat Penta clean? That would make no sense. It doesn't even fit his character to do that. He's the chicken shit heel. He needs help. He needs help from his girlfriend. He needs help from his friends. That's how he wins matches. Or at WrestleMania, he'll steal the pin from somebody. But whatever. He'll do whatever it takes. He's not going in there and beating Penta clean. So you knew somebody was going to get involved here. So everybody got involved. Multiple people got involved. And, you know, look, I'm not thrilled that Penta took a loss like that. I know people are going to say, oh, the bloom is off the rose. That's it. He's buried. He's being buried. We knew this was going to happen. Calm down. Let's see where things go for Penta. I will tell you this. Penta, as over as he is right now, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he got over so fast in front of this audience because you just never know, right? These people, they don't know who he is. You never know how a new audience is going to take to him. The presentation is so important. But his presentation is bang on, and he's doing very well. All that being said, I miss murderous Penta. I miss Pentagon Dark, Pentagon Black, whatever you want to call him. I would like to see that version, a more violent, sinister version of Penta at some point in the near future. I don't want to wait 2 years to see it. So this is all well and good, but if we're going to continue or start to see him losing more matches like this, and he just sort of settles in at a certain level, they need to do something about that. Because he's better than that. I don't want to see him settle. I want to see him maintain that momentum, even if it means turning him heel. But I mean like really fucking heel. Like where he's going around breaking people's arms. You know, he has the sacrifice. He calls it the sacrifice. He uses the sacrifice in his matches. But I mean, it's a setup spot to the finish, right? I want to see him going around breaking bones is what I want to do. At some point, we need to get that version of Penta. This baby face, like going around to the kids and everything. I mean, that's all well and good. But again, you know, fuck those kids. All right. At some point, we need the darker version of Penta. My fear is that we're not going to get it because at some point they're going to want to do a Lucha Brothers reunion, of course, naturally. And that really doesn't work if Penta's a heel. So I get it. I get it. We're probably not going to get that anytime soon, but it's one loss. All right. I know he didn't win at WrestleMania either, but he didn't get pinned at WrestleMania. Here he got pinned. As long as they don't make a habit out of it, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. Let's not start using the B word. Then we had the match that, as I said earlier, this is the one that I was most looking forward to coming into this show. It was the match that intrigued me the most, and I thought, you know, outside of St. Louis loving Randy Orton, obviously, would have the most heat out of anything on the entire show. Michael Cole apologized to us before this even started. He told us that in 28 years of working in this company, of having a career in professional wrestling, he has never been biased. And I was like, excuse me? Did they use the Men in Black mind-blanking device on him to completely wipe out the heel turn that I had to sit through and endure for years on end until it finally ended after he saved Jerry Lawler's life? Then we didn't have to suffer through heel Cole anymore? Because I remember those days of heel Michael Cole. He sounded pretty fucking biased to me. But he would have you believe that in 28 years, he's never been biased before. But he likes to think that he's earned the right to share his opinion. Right? He's earned that right. Only missed 3 days of work in 28 years. We should be allowed to give our opinion on things. And it's unfair that we have to get assaulted or attacked or intimidated by people because of it. So yes, I'm going to be biased, he said, towards Pat McAfee, my friend, my colleague here in this match, because he doesn't like Gunther. So Pat entered first, as he should. Gunther walked out, and this guy, he was rubbing his hands together like he was getting ready to dive into a nice steak dinner. He was ready for this. He had a big smile on his face. So McAfee took his jersey off and tossed it into the crowd. Crowd chanted, "You tapped out," at Gunther. Gunther gave McAfee a clean break early in the match and patted him on the head. McAfee struck Gunther, and then he tried to jump into the ring. He was on the apron, and he tried to jump over the top rope into the ring, and he tripped. He didn't clear the rope, and he tripped. But he very quick, like, he didn't stop for anything. He got right back up, didn't give people a chance to really digest it. And Cole, even on commentary, is like, well, look, first of all, it's the inexperience. But also, he's got the adrenaline pumping. He's all fired up. He's all nervous. Like, I like the way he at least explained it away. Because it is, like, he's in there, and he's not a wrestler, right? He doesn't wrestle on a regular basis. But he's in there, and he's all full of just, you know, piss and vinegar, and he's ready to go after this guy. And you're going to make mistakes. So at least he didn't get hurt. At least he didn't fucking tear anything. So anyway, he got right back up, and he charged at Gunther, who put him down with a big chop. Gunther chopped McAfee again, and then he looked over at Michael Cole, and he smirked. Cole asked him, because he's looking up at Gunther, and it's like, just cover him and end it. Which I'm sure was very encouraging for Pat McAfee to be listening to, as he hears his dear friend and broadcast colleague Michael Cole repeatedly telling his opponent, just cover him and end it. Gunther's not going to end it. He's having too much fun. Why would he end it? So he's toying with McAfee. McAfee, though, fires back with a chop of his own. Gunther immediately puts him down with a big boot. So Gunther holds the ropes open for Michael Cole. He's telling Cole, why don't you come on inside? Wade Barrett's on commentary. He did commentary tonight with Cole. And he advised Cole to sit down and avoid eye contact with Gunther. Wade is the only one with brains, honestly, in this entire thing here. He was the only one smart enough not to get himself involved. He's like, sit down, okay? You're not a wrestler. Sit down. Do not make eye contact with this man. And just mind your own business, for crying out loud. He's the only one with brains. McAfee threw a big slap at Gunther. Gunther, though, put him right down with a chop. So he places McAfee on the top turnbuckle, and then he goes up behind McAfee, and he's trying for a gut-wrench suplex. McAfee, though, avoids it, elbows him off the ropes, and Pat goes for a moonsault. Now, Gunther moves out of the way, but Pat lands on his feet. Gunther goes for a German suplex, only McAfee, he kind of, sort of landed on his feet, and he threw a kick. McAfee then punted because he was a punter. So he is kicking Gunther. He punts Gunther. Not like the way Randy Orton. He didn't punt him in the fucking head, but threw a punt kick at him, basically. Covered him, and Gunther kicks out at one. He's like, yeah, we're not doing this. He kicks out at one. Some moments later, Gunther puts McAfee down with a power bomb, and Cole, again, outside the ring, is yelling for him, just end it. Just end the match. You know, I could recall many times years ago, one of the John Cena Randy Orton matches from their classic feud, where I believe I was muttering those very words to myself as I was watching that pay-per-view. I don't remember which one of their 800 matches it was, but I too was sitting here going, end it, please. Gunther has no interest in ending it, though. He puts McAfee in a Boston Crab. So now Cole's seen enough. And Michael Cole, he takes off his headset. And the crowd now gets loud, right? Because they think Michael Cole... Actually, what do they think Michael Cole was going to do here? If they really cared about this man, they would be expressing concern. They wouldn't be encouraging him to get involved in this match. But he puts his headset down. And he goes over and he's going to play cheerleader for Pat McAfee. So Gunther grabs Cole, pulls him into the ring, and on commentary, Barrett is going on, that's a 58-year-old man. What are you doing? Well, you know what? That 58-year-old man had no business putting his headset down. That's what happens. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. You know, we're heading into the summer weather soon, which means beach bodies. Which also means there's never been a better time to start eating healthier if you're not already doing so. It's not just good for your figure, but your health as well. And you can make this your best season yet with nutritious two-minute meals from Factor. Eating well has never been this easy. Just heat it and eat it and give yourself more time to do what you want. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, making them perfect for any active lifestyle. Here in New York, you know, we're seeing days in the 70s, approaching the 80s soon. So get outside instead of prepping and cooking indoors. With 45 weekly menu options, you can choose gourmet meals that fit your goals. Choose from Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and more. Factor powers your day with satisfying breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, and premium dinners. Not to mention guilt-free snacks and desserts. See, now you're talking my love language. It's easy to savor more this spring. Factor meals pack in the flavor without all the fuss. Now, one of my favorite recent meals from Factor was the Ropa Vieja chicken thigh bowl. I love me some chicken. There was also a spicy sweet potatoes and peanut sauce meal with coconut rice and roasted green beans that was very good. But my favorite by far was the sesame teriyaki filet mignon. It's pretty mind-blowing that it takes so little time to prepare a meal this good. You don't just want to feel like you're eating healthier. You want to actually enjoy what you're eating. And this was delicious. They only take minutes to make, which is good for me since I'm streaming most nights, as you know. So I don't want to spend forever eating dinner, making dinner before I have to go to work. Factor takes care of that for me, and it can take care of it for you too with this exclusive offer for Sound Off listeners. Get started at factormeals.com/solomonster50off and use code solomonster50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code solomonster50off. At factormeals.com/solomonster50off for 50% off plus free shipping. So McAfee catches Gunther with a kick that allowed Cole to scamper back to the floor. McAfee rolls up Gunther for a two count. Gunther now tries to suplex McAfee, who's on the apron, and he's going to suplex him back into the ring. Now, Michael Cole is right there, and he's kind of hunched down like he almost doesn't want to be seen. And Gunther tries to suplex McAfee back into the ring, and Cole reaches up and he trips Gunther so that McAfee falls on top of him. So he did the Bobby Heenan spot. Okay, this is how Bobby Heenan helped Rick Rude beat the Ultimate Warrior to win the IC title. And I'm watching this, and I almost had a fucking heart attack watching it because I'm just thinking, don't you dare. Don't you dare even think about it. And thankfully they didn't. I mean, they thought about it, but they didn't do it. And Gunther kicked out. Because I thought for sure, like at that moment, I'm like, you sons of bitches, you better not be doing what I think you're about to do. But they didn't. And Gunther kicked out. So Gunther, he stares down Cole on the floor, like he can't believe what just happened here, because the referee didn't see it. McAfee sneaks up behind Gunther and he puts him in a choke. He puts him in a sleeper hold. Gunther, though, gets out of it because he just destroys this man with a lariat. Okay, turns him almost inside out. So then he puts McAfee in a sleeper hold, and he got him down on the mat, and it looked academic. It looked like, okay, Pat's fading, and this is going to be the end of it here. But then McAfee, you know, his hand is kind of falling, but then it's like he hulks up. He's hulking up, okay? And he manages to power out of it enough that Gunther actually gets back to his feet. But then Gunther ends up taking him back down to the mat for a second time. Pat's trying to get the arm up. Gunther uses his leg to trap the arm. And then eventually McAfee, as he should, goes nighty-night. And the referee calls for the stoppage. And Gunther wins the match. Which is the only outcome of this match that was possible here. So when the match is over, Cole gets into the ring. He's going to go check on Pat. And Gunther is looking down at both men. McAfee gets to his feet. So now you got McAfee and Cole standing there. And Gunther is standing there. And we don't know what's going to happen here. And I'm thinking, are we going to hear the music? Are we going to see him? Are we going to see Goldberg make an appearance here? There was no Goldberg on the show. That's good. But instead, Gunther is looking at McAfee. And I almost thought he was putting his hand out for a handshake at first, but he was basically just sort of nodding to him as a show of respect. And then he left. And that was it. Gunther paid respect to Pat McAfee. It's one of the things I like about his character, because for so many years, you know, the top heels, monster heels, not all the monster heels, but it was a Vince McMahon thing where they all operated the same way, more or less, right? There really weren't a lot of shades of gray. They cheated, or some of them were chicken shit heels, but very rarely, you know, did a match end, for example, and the heel would go for a handshake, or the heel would express, you know, outward respect for their opponent. We saw what happened last year in Saudi Arabia when Gunther lost to Cody Rhodes, right? He went over to Cody, he said some stuff to him, paid respect to him. I think he shook his hand and he left. It's like, huh, interesting. And that's kind of what he did here. Because Gunther is the kind of heel where whether, you know, the other guy beats him, or even if they don't beat him, but they put up a hell of a fight, he's not above showing respect to his opponent. So that's what he did here. That's how I read it. He's done it before. It's kind of his thing. You don't necessarily expect it. I wasn't expecting that to happen here. I thought he was going to drop him again, but he didn't. And then he left, and that was it. So they gave them 14 minutes for this. 14 minutes is what this got. And can't really argue it, because the crowd ate it up. The way they laid this match out was exactly how this match should have gone. Send them out there. You have Gunther underestimate this man. Even though on Raw he said he wasn't going to, he had that big smile on his face like he knew how this story is going to end before it even ends. And then give Pat some hope spots, let him rally the audience. The crowd was firmly behind him. You know, sometimes you get that heel, that really super heel crowd where they either just cheer for all the heels, or they decide, you know what, we want to see Gunther murder this man. We would like to witness a murder here. And they didn't do that. They were behind Pat. They were behind Cole. They played their role in this match. And they were hot for it the entire time. McAfee did his part. He got tripped up in that one spot, but so what? And Gunther is Gunther. You know, he's always great. He plays his role exactly how he needs to. He's got that smug look on his face like he knows he's better than everybody, and it just annoys the shit out of you, but you can't really argue it. The guy's been a champion for 85% of his run there. I am curious, though, like if they don't tie this in with Goldberg's retirement match, because I have to assume that Gunther is still going to be the guy that they have lined up for that spot. And Goldberg himself has said that he's having the retirement match in the summer, right? Well, summer is not that far off. Summer is next month, which really only leaves two options. Night of Champions, because it's Saudi, and they might want him in Saudi, or SummerSlam, which is what I'm thinking. So how do they get to that match? I thought this would be the connection. You know, McAfee's got the NFL background. Maybe he calls in some reinforcements if he needs help. Not in the match, but like if they were to continue this. Based on what we saw here, this looks like it's one and done. I guess we'll find out on Monday, but certainly the way he paid respect to Pat didn't lead me to believe that this is really going to go any further. So what are they going to do with Gunther now? He's not in the title picture. It feels now coming out of this like, until and unless we get to the Goldberg thing, he's sort of on an island all unto himself. Maybe he disappears again for a few weeks. I don't know. If not the Goldberg match, I don't know where he goes next. He's just in this weird, almost holding pattern right now, where he just doesn't really have a spot. You know, certainly not for the two top titles. Those are occupied. And so if he's not wrestling for a world championship, then what do you do with him? So that'll be interesting to see if we even see him on TV this week or if he goes away for a little while. But I enjoyed this for what it was. I don't think it needed to go 14 minutes. I think you could have shaved a few minutes off of it, but it worked. It worked exactly the way that it was supposed to work. And then we get to the main event. For the final time, maybe, John Cena defends the WWE Championship against Randy Orton. Right at the top of the 9 p.m. hour is when the entrances began for this match. So you knew they were getting out of there no later than 10 p.m. Randy Orton comes out first. They brought back the decibel meter for some of the entrances. So for Randy's entrance, they had it in the lower left corner. I don't even know how accurate it is. It's just a fucking graphic they put on the screen. I don't know. Do they have somebody in the back measuring the decibel level and piping out real numbers? I don't trust anything I see with this company, but they were loud. That's all you need to know. They were in St. Louis. They sang his song. I'm sure Randy had his family there. His friends were there. His dad was probably there. His wife, his kids. It's a big night for the Orton family. Could he win championship number 15? That was the question coming into this show. And then John Cena comes out. Very basic graphics. Title belt turned backwards. Same John Cena entrance that he's been making since he went heel. Alicia Taylor did the ring intros, and we were off to the races for what very well may be the final John Cena-Randy Orton match, and it started with a collar and elbow tie-up between these two into the stalemate. Cena then offered a handshake, and he poked Randy in the eye instead. Randy returned the favor a moment later with an eye poke of his own. See, that's why Cody Rhodes is no longer the WWE champion. Cody couldn't even bring himself to do what Randy did here. That's why he lost his title and he got kicked in the dick because he's an idiot. If he would have been willing to get down in the dirt with this man, he might still be the champion. See, that should be the story. Cena got frustrated. He tried to leave. Got about, I don't know, halfway down the aisle, but Orton went out to cut him off. Fought him all the way back to the ring. 20 punches in the corner as the crowd chanted along. And then an uppercut put Cena down for two. Michael Cole says he didn't really think he was going to win with that. He's just trying to wear this man down. So they traded sleeper hold attempts until Orton put him down with a back suplex. Cena came back with a five-knuckle shuffle. He attempted an attitude adjustment, but Orton slipped out, and he dropped him with a clothesline. He dropped him after that with a snap power slam. Then came the draping DDT attempt. Cena, though, rolled up Orton instead for a two count. Cena now tries for the STFU, as they are once again calling it, the STFU. He tries for it, but he didn't have it all locked in. Honestly, let's be honest here, okay? Whenever Cena does this move, 9 times out of 10, and I don't just mean now, I mean his entire career, after, you know, he almost killed Umaga with it, it looks like shit. And I can understand it, because apparently he was really... And there was one time, I don't remember what show it was. It might have been their TLC match. I could be wrong at Unforgiven, because I think Edge talked about this. Early in his career, Cena had a tendency, I don't know if it was just a case of him not knowing his own strength or him just getting a little overexcited, but he would lock that STF on, and he was choking people out with it. Like, legitimately choking them out, where it's like, okay, dude, like, you know, loosen up a little bit. That's what happened with Umaga when they had their last man standing match at the Royal Rumble. I think he tied the ring rope around his neck and he yanked back on it. The fucking guy passed out. So I'm not saying that, you know, I want to see people turning blue in the face when John Cena puts them in an STF, but for God's sakes, like, when you even have Stone Cold Steve Austin over the years watching your matches and begging you to, as Austin would say, tighten your shit up, like, it's just never looked good. It's just never looked good. So that's just been a Cena thing for the longest time. And it didn't look any better here in this match. But he tried to lock it in, and Orton was able to get out of it. Then he got the draping DDT. So then comes the setup for the RKO. Cena stumbles to his feet. Cena blocks it. He got Orton on his shoulders for an AA, and he delivers it. But no, because on the way down, Randy Orton catches him. He counters out of it into an RKO. Now, it was a great spot. I don't know if they've ever done that before. I mean, honestly, as many matches as these two have had, I'm sure it's been done. Even if it was a TV match, I'm sure it's been done at some point before. I just don't recall them doing that spot offhand. But at first, it didn't really get like a huge reaction because I don't know how many people actually knew that Orton even countered it into an RKO. Especially if you're sitting up in like the 200 level seats, you're watching this, unless you're watching the big screen. It just looks like Cena hit an attitude adjustment, but then they were both down. And it's like, what the hell happened here?
But, the best moveset.
Yeah, he does. Orton did, man. What a counter. The best moveset from Randy Orton. So yeah, he countered it into an RKO, but now both men were down. And they got a "This is awesome" chant as they're both laying there on the mat. So then we got the yay boo spot back and forth, and we got a proper attitude adjustment by Cena. Orton kicks out. Cena gets up. He hits a shoulder tackle. When he goes for the second diving shoulder tackle, he dives right into an RKO by Randy Orton. So that was a nice counter. Orton, though, could not capitalize right away, so there was no pin attempt. But then he noticed that Cena was in prime position for a punt kick. And he backs up into the corner. He goes for the punt. Cena moves out of the way and then picks him up for a second attitude adjustment. And he covers Orton, and again, Orton kicks out. So now Cena begins to mock Randy Orton. He begins to pound on the mat. And you got to be careful when you do that, because Randy Orton, I think he dislocated his shoulder doing that in a match with, I want to say, Triple H once. Literally, he's banging on the mat, pounding on the mat, and all of a sudden it's like, ah, shit. And his arm went out. I think he also broke his collarbone a couple of times. I don't think that was a broken collarbone, though. I think that was a different shoulder injury. But he's banging on the mat. And he backs, and then he backs up into the corner. Cena does, and he's going to give a punt kick of his own. Orton moves out of the way, though. There's another RKO attempt. Cena, though, shoves him off into referee Chad Patton. So there's your ref bump. And now I'm just waiting for it. I'm just waiting for Fiend. Because now I'm conditioned to expect it. Referee is down. And Cena lands a third attitude adjustment, but there's no referee, and Cena knows it. He's got a smirk on his face. So Cena leaves the ring. He grabs the title belt, but as soon as he climbs back into the ring, Orton drops him with an RKO. There's no referee, though, but he's starting to stir, and now the referee crawls over to count. Cena kicks out at two. So they end up outside the ring. Orton begins moving all the furniture off the announce desk. Chad Patton is suddenly now pleading with Randy Orton. Referee is outside the ring. He's pleading with Randy, don't do this. Whatever you're about to do, don't do it. Cena gets up. And by the way, whatever it is that Orton was getting ready to do, we'll never know, because Chad Patton was trying to talk him out of it. But Cena shoves Orton into the referee, and Patton takes a ref. I think he took a bump into the steps. Second ref bump now of the match. Chad Patton once again down. Cena lifts Orton up on his shoulders, but Orton slips out, and Orton delivers an attitude adjustment to John Cena onto the announce desk. And he bounces off the desk, and the desk does not break, at least not right away. It did break, but it was like a delayed reaction. It was the weirdest thing, because he drops him on the table, because they have these like specially reinforced announce desks now that are like super fancy. So it didn't break, and I think they cut away to Orton, but when they cut back, the table was like partially broken. Like, I didn't even see how it happened. but like one leg was still standing. It was like a ramp, and the other leg was down on the ground. So Orton goes under the ring, and he drags out a table, a regular wooden table, and he sets it up on the floor. And then he goes back to Cena, and he delivers an attitude adjustment to John Cena through that table. And it would be fucking hilarious. And actually, this is exactly what I think happened. The table was supposed to break, or he wanted the announce table to break, and it didn't. And then it kind of broke, and it looked funky. And he's like, fuck this, you're going through a table. So he went under, because at first he went under the ring, and he couldn't find what he was looking for. So he had to go around to a different side, and then he found a table. And he brought Cena over, and he put him through the table. That was an audible that he called. I guarantee you that was an audible in this match. He's like, you're going through a fucking table. I don't care what I got to do. So that was funny. So Orton puts Cena back in the ring. We still have no referee, though. Orton sets up for another RKO, and he hits it. And at this point, I stopped keeping track. I was trying to like, okay, how many attitude adjustments, how many RKOs? The answer is a lot. I don't even know what the specific number is. They were going into their full finisher spam mode here. You know, finisher spam is an interesting thing because generally you just get to a point where I hate it. There are some matches where they go so overboard with it. It's one of the biggest reasons I despise the second WrestleMania match that John Cena and The Rock had. Like, that's all it was. It was like attitude adjustment attempt, rock bottom, attitude adjustment, rock bottom, like how I play video games, right? It works for me, but like when you're sitting here watching it, it sucks. There are certain matches though, and in both companies, really in any company, because it has become a very, very common thing in wrestling. I would say more so in the last 15 years than any, not that it didn't happen before that, because it did. I mean, it was happening even back in the Attitude Era, but it got really bad, like in the last 15 years or so, where they're just so heavily reliant on it in so many main events now. Some people can make it work. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, they found a way to make it work, and they had that epic match at WrestleMania 25. Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano might have been that first takeover match they had. One of the best matches in NXT history. There was a lot of that in that match too, but there are other matches I'll watch and it just takes me out of the match. So it really depends on the situation. It didn't bother me as much here. I mean, it's kind of hilarious just how many fucking RKOs and attitude adjustments we got, but they had to. These two guys were not going to go out there and have a technical masterpiece. They needed that. That's the point I was making at the beginning of the review. The smoke and mirrors and the ref bumps and, you know, I could have done without the nut shot, but this is the kind of stuff that they had to do because what else are they going to do? What else can Cena do at this point, if not the kind of match that we saw here? But it is comical. I just stopped counting because we got so many of them. So anyway, Orton sets up for an RKO and hits it. Here comes a new referee. Referee Eddie Arango, I believe he's the Mets fan. Good man. Eddie comes down to the ring. He sprints down, makes the count. Cena kicks out at two. So Orton begins arguing with the referee over the count. He thought it was three. Meanwhile, Cena goes and grabs the belt. And he goes to strike Orton with it, but he dodges. And Cena blasts the referee with the title instead. Third ref bump of the match. Jeff Jarrett, man, his loins are tingling down there in Nashville. Oh, he's loving this. Third ref bump here in this match. Orton then hits another RKO. Eddie covers. Now Nick Aldis runs into the ring. He's in full suit. At first you think he's going to count the fall, but no, he's in there to check on the referee. And there's a whole gaggle of producers that come to the ring with him, and they're checking on the referee. Orton is just furious about this. There's no referee. He's got the championship won. Nick Aldis comes over. He's trying to talk to Orton. Orton's got his head in his hands like he can't believe what's going on here. So he does the only sensible thing to do, which is he drops Nick Aldis with an RKO. The third one that he has eaten in the last 2 years. But he wasn't the only one who got dropped with an RKO. Nick Aldis got dropped. Shane Helms got dropped. Daivari got dropped. Jamie Noble got dropped. There was some other guy in the ring who took this exaggerated bump. I have no fucking idea who he was. I've never seen this man before in my life, I don't think. I didn't recognize him, but he took an RKO as well. He was actually the first one after Aldis. If anybody wants to go back and rewatch that. Who was the guy who took the RKO right after Nick Aldis and before Shane Helms? I don't know who that person is. But you got bodies everywhere now, right? They've all been RKO'd into oblivion. Now Orton is setting up one more time for the punt kick to John Cena. When all of a sudden, R-Truth slips into the ring and he gets in the line of fire and Orton has to pull up and he's looking at him like, what are you doing here? And Truth is begging him not to do it. He's got his hands like clasped together. He's begging Randy Orton not to do this. So Orton drops him with an RKO. But then John Cena delivers a low blow. And then he grabs the championship and he blasts Orton in the skull with it. He gets rid of the evidence. He makes the cover. And wouldn't you know, look who just woke up from his nap. Chad Patton. And so the referee happens to come back into the ring at the very moment that John Cena has the match won. He counts the three, and John Cena retains the championship. So after the match is over, Cena gets on the mic. They go through all the replays and everything. Cena gets on the mic, and he says, I know you can't see me, but can you hear me? Cut my damn music. They cut his music, and he says, I don't need music. What I need is competition. And he says he sure as hell doesn't need us. Drink it in, St. Louis, because this is what the last real champion looks like. And he went from corner to corner posing as the fans showered him with booze. Was it overbooked as all hell? Yes, it was. Did it make the match worse? No, it probably made the match better. Because my expectations, once the bell rang, this was like to me coming into this, the classic case of Orton's going to come out, he's going to get a monster reaction, Cena's going to get booed, and then the bell rings. And what are you really going to get out of John Cena in 2025? What have we seen from him so far that would lead you to believe that he's going to go in there in a one-on-one match? So we're, you know, very different from the Elimination Chamber where there's five other guys. And he's not in there for the entire match. What do you really expect out of Cena in a paper, like a 20, 30 minute pay-per-view main event? Exactly what we got here. And they tried, they threw everything they could into this match. All of the finisher attempts and the punt kick attempts and the counters. And there were a couple of unique RKO counters in this match that I enjoyed from Orton. You know, I thought those were very good. And then they got outside and they did some stuff outside with the tables. But then, you know, the ref bumps. And of course, you know, it got ridiculous with the ref bumps. But this went better than I really could have ever imagined it would. This was the best possible John Cena-Randy Orton match that we could have asked for in St. Louis tonight. And that's really all that I could ask for. I thought this thing had the potential to be a dud. Especially if the crowd maybe wasn't really able to carry it like I thought they would. The crowd was great. Crowd was into everything they were doing, you know, because it's Randy and it's St. Louis. And to them, it's Randy Orton and John Cena. And it was marketed as the last time, even though it might not be, but it could be, right? So you get to be part of history. You get to be part of the very last match between John Cena and Randy Orton. So the crowd was great. They threw everything they possibly could. Cena wins, no surprise there, right? Nobody. I don't even think Cowboy Bob was sitting in the crowd, if he was in the crowd, watching this match, thinking his son was going to walk away with the championship win. You know, I talked about the possibility of R-Truth getting involved last week on the SmackDown review. And the way that I kind of looked at it is, you can do almost like a useful idiot story where Cena sees that this man is still sticking up for him even after everything he's said and done. And he realizes, you know what? I'm going to lean into this because this guy actually buys into my bullshit. Or even if Cena doesn't look at it as bullshit, but like he believes in me. He believes in my cause. I could use this. And Truth becomes like his useful idiot for a few months. until eventually he snaps out of it. So I don't know if that's the tack they're going to take with it, but we have not seen the last. And actually, somebody did mention this before. Yeah, BlissFan just mentioned it also. Cena turned on Truth in the press conference. So I guess that answers that question. They're not going to go the useful idiot route. Because apparently did he give him an attitude adjustment at the press conference? That's what I heard. So whatever it was that he did, apparently R-Truth has been attacked by John Cena. John Cena wants nothing to do with this man. And I did mention that also, you know, when Cena first went heel, I said, man, if you really want to get heat on this guy, you have him go after one of the most beloved characters in the entire company. But I think if you wanted to, though, they could have gone the other way with it too and really milked it for a while before Cena then turned on him. But I wonder if they had him do that to him because they're setting up Truth for the next match. Because this is what I was going to get into now, which is, you know, where do you go from here? Okay, he just beat Randy Orton. Cody Rhodes did not show up. I thought there was a chance he might. There was no Cody Rhodes on the show tonight. What is next for John Cena? Because before what happened at the press conference happened, when the show went off the air, John Cena leaves the ring, and he had a look on his face, and the camera was right up in his face. And the look on his face was one of almost regret. Like, what have I done? What am I doing? He's looking, he's got the title on the apron, he's looking at it, and he walks to the back, but it was almost like an introspective look on his face. And I looked at that and I said, okay, this is probably the first seed being planted for what will be the eventual redemption arc that we all, I think, pretty much expect is going to be coming at some point in the next few months, so that we can get Cena back to being the John Cena of old just in time for him to have, you know, that one last match. And by the way, there is a little bit of news on that. And WrestleVotes mentioned this tonight. There was a news report, and actually it's not even new. It was a news report from like 2 weeks ago, I guess, that kind of flew under the radar. But it was a local TV report from one of the stations, I think, in Boston. And they did a whole story on Cena and his father, interviewed his father, who's been, you know, a wrestling manager and personality on the New England independent scene for a very long time, many, many years. And at the very end of the report, when they cut back to the anchors in studio, they mentioned that John Cena will be wrestling his final match at the TD Garden Arena in Boston in December. So for anybody wondering, you know, when and where are they going to do that last match? Boston, you know, obviously Boston for John Cena makes a lot of sense. So I don't know if that's going to be a special, I think it should be a special event, whether it's Peacock or Netflix. And they could even call it, you know, John Cena, the final match or something. And they could have other matches on the show, but build an entire special around it. Like when he first announced this, I said, that's exactly what I would do. I wouldn't just have a Saturday night's main event or one of my regular, you know, PLEs. I would build an entirely new event around just the fact that John Cena is wrestling his last match and do that in December of 2025. So I don't know if that's what they're going to do. I don't know if it's because there should be a Saturday night's main event that month. This is bigger than that, though. But it is going to be in Boston. It is going to be at the TD Garden. So, yeah, exactly. JP says like the Last Dance. Exactly. Something very, very similar to that. But it will be in Boston at the TD Garden Arena. As far as what's next for Cena, opponent-wise, it could be Truth. John Cena has been advertised for Saturday night's main event on May 24th. We know he will be on the show. That does not mean he is wrestling on the show. Jey Uso is defending the World Heavyweight title, it was announced, against Logan Paul on that show. They may well close the show with that. You know, if Cena's going to be in a segment, they could do that in the middle of the show. But if Cena's wrestling, then he's the main event. Well, who does he wrestle? You could easily do a rematch with Randy Orton. That's why I kept saying, like, maybe their final match, right? I mean, come on. You don't think there isn't a pretty good chance they don't run this back one more time, possibly on that show at the end of the month? They could get one more John Cena, Randy Orton match if they wanted to. I don't know that it could be as good as the one they had tonight. That's the only thing. Despite the finish, the cheap finish. As a match, I don't see them having a better match than the one they had at Backlash. So they might be better off going into R-Truth. I know it sounds completely ridiculous, R-Truth getting a WWE Championship match. Well, who says it has to be for the championship? Right? Nobody says it has to be for the championship. But how do you not do that match now, especially in light of what he did to him, I guess, at the press conference after the show? Maybe that's the play. You know, one of the things I was kind of hoping for in this last Cena run is not only the big matches against Randy Orton and CM Punk and people like that, but like we get him in the ring with some either younger, newer faces or just some people that you would never expect him to be in the ring on like a PLE with. What's the harm in having John Cena do an odd SmackDown match or Raw match here and there against somebody like a Truth, who's been imitating him for years now and stealing all of his moves? What about one last match with John Cena and Sheamus? What about one last match with John Cena and AJ Styles? What if he revisits matches with some of his old rivals? And I'm not talking programs. I'm just talking like one match. Title match, non-title match, doesn't really matter. Right? I don't know that they're doing that. That was something I was kind of hoping for at the beginning of all this. Cena and Truth easily could be a television match. I don't see why not. And you know what? Especially if it was a title match, people would be behind Truth. Man, you think Cena in there with Orton, you know, because, you know, Orton obviously in St. Louis was going to be cheered wildly. I think Truth is so beloved by this audience that whatever arena or city they do it in, you would have that entire crowd. It would almost be like the Santino Marella thing from the Elimination Chamber many years ago when it came down to him and Daniel Bryan. I want to say maybe that was 2012. And you had people hoping and believing that maybe Santino Marella would win the WWE Championship. Like they bought into it so much. And so maybe they could do something similar with Cena and Truth and really get the crowd into it. Maybe that's Saturday night's main event. I guess we'll see. But the CM Punk match has to happen. You cannot turn John Cena back babyface until we get that match with him and CM Punk. You can't do that. Not after the promo that Punk cut coming out of the Elimination Chamber, where he went off on The Rock. Remember that? Like, yeah, the goosebumps, the bald fraud. And then he went in on Cena. And you can't have him cut that promo and not give us the match, you know, before he goes back babyface. So I look at that and go, man, Cena and Punk, that should be the SummerSlam match. I know everybody's going to be saying Money in the Bank. You know, Punk is all wrapped up right now with Seth Rollins. You know, we got to get that tag team match. We got to get Punk and Roman Reigns on the same side against Rollins and Braun Breaker. It doesn't feel like we're headed for Cena and Punk for at least a few months. I see that as a SummerSlam match at MetLife Stadium. So, Truth, maybe not Truth, maybe a rematch with Orton. I don't really know that that's completely necessary, though. Cody, you want to save Cody for later because Cody needs to be the one to beat him. I'm sorry, all the Cody haters or the people that just don't like Cody, you're not going to want to hear that. But you can't have John Cena beat Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania and not have Cody, who is the face of your company. He's the face of your franchise. And not have him be the one to come back and get that win back over John Cena. Otherwise, the decision for him to beat Cody at WrestleMania is just mind-numbingly stupid. If it doesn't end with Cody getting his win back and his belt back from John Cena and putting him in the dirt. That's how it has to go. But that's not going to happen for a few months at least. That's why I said, who's next? Right? How do they space this out? That's kind of how it's looking to me. Could do something with Truth, save the Punk thing for SummerSlam. What you do with him at Money in the Bank, it's kind of up in the air. But the redemption arc is coming. We saw a little hint of it tonight. The redemption arc is coming. It's just a matter of when they decide to pull the trigger. Take a look at the Twitter poll, find out what you guys thought of Backlash. 71.7% thumbs up, 17.7% thumbs in the middle, and 10.6% thumbs down, with well over 2,200 votes in so far. and counting. EA says, do Punk at Money in the Bank and SummerSlam. I don't know, man. Money in the Bank now is less than a month away. And Punk has other issues going on right now. That would feel completely rushed if they did it at Money in the Bank. I don't think it's going to work out for Money in the Bank. Doesn't feel that way to me. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Mental health awareness has become a big thing in recent years. I feel like we hear more about it now than we ever did 10 or 20 years ago. And that's a good thing. But there's still room for improvement. 26% of Americans who took part in one recent survey say they've avoided seeking mental health support because they're afraid of being judged. And when people hesitate to get the help they need, it doesn't just affect them. It affects their family, their friends, even their coworkers. This Mental Health Awareness Month, let's encourage everyone to take care of their well-being and break this ridiculous stigma that still exists about therapy and seeking help from others when you think you need it. Therapy offers a ton of benefits for your mental health, from coping skills to stress management, teaching you how to strengthen your existing relationships and remove barriers to you forming new ones. And it can also help you process past traumas in your life, no matter how big or small they may be. BetterHelp has, for more than a decade, helped match people with the right therapist from their growing network of more than 30,000 licensed therapists with a wide range of specialties. It's also fully online, making it convenient and affordable at a time when things seem to be getting increasingly unaffordable. You also don't have to feel committed to one therapist if you want to change to a new one for any reason. BetterHelp gives you the option to do that at no extra cost. We're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. All right, let's take a look at your Super Chats. Thank you guys for all the love tonight. I'm going to read them all here and answer your questions, whatever you got for me. How do you sleep at night? Not very well. Not after this weekend, I don't. I am running on fumes. And I have a podcast to do in less than 24 hours. All right. Let's take a look here and see what we got going on. We are currently at 622 likes. That's what I like to see. Let's see if we can get 700. I think we can get to 700. That's what I think. Hey, Lakers, Pats, we'll start with you. Wanted to know, would 3-hour Attitude Era Raws have worked? As a fan at the time, I would have loved it, but no. In the end, it would not have worked. It would have burned the audience out. You give them too much of a good thing, you will burn them out. And I do think that it would have actually ended up being a negative thing. I think initially, though, people would have been excited for an extra hour of Raw every week. So you get 3 hours of Crash TV instead of two. It's not sustainable. One of the things back then, I guess I was just the right age at that time, is that when those shows were over, my attitude was shit. I can't wait until next week. Like, you didn't want them to be over. So now you give people even more of it, and I feel like you're taking that away. You're going to burn some people out. 3 hours, it's just too much. Every week, it's too much. JS Warrior 19 with a $20 super chat. As a kid, I grew up watching WWE in 2004. Randy Orton was my favorite, and he still is to this day. This match was an homage to their many matches over the years. And yes, I know way too many, but I love this main event. Well, yeah, I mean, especially if you were a fan of the John Cena-Randy Orton feud, I mean, you have no reason not to love this main event. But even if you were sick to death of it, it's been, 8 years? I think the last one before tonight that they had was a SmackDown match in 2017. So it's been a long time. And knowing it could be the last time, you might be a little more accepting of some of the stuff they did because they were trying to throw in a lot of stuff. Was it an homage to their earlier matches? It may have been. I don't recall offhand where they did that AA into an RKO spot. But I'm almost positive that that was not the first time they've done it. Gary Kozchuk is with us. Main event was a masterclass, maybe their best match. Love the pivot to the second table spot. Take note, Moxley. Tell a story. All hail Gunther. Thank you, Gary. Joseph, Cena looked painful. Russo booked that shit 4 out of 10, says Joseph. Holiday 197, hi Solo. Cole was a heel tonight holding Gunther's leg, so it was harder for him to kick out. Michael has been more heelish over the past few weeks, angering Gunther with the "you tapped out" comment. 'Well, Michael Cole would tell you that he's been there for 28 years and he can do whatever the fuck he wants. But yeah, Gunther did nothing wrong. So apparently John Cena and Randy Orton did that spot through a table. Was it a pay-per-view match? I think maybe it was like a Raw match. Again, they had so many matches. It all blends together. It really does. It all blends together. Oscar Fierro Cruz. What a waste the Cena heel turn has been. An absentee champion with mid-matches and mid-promos. Oscar is no fan of the John Cena heel turn. J-Rock. My dog ate all the titles out of the Scrabble game. I took him to the vet. No word yet. Thank you, J-Rock. Dried Chicken, currently watching New Japan Resurgence after watching Backlash. Triple H needs 6 matches on the card for PLEs, not 5. 3 from Raw and 3 from SmackDown. I agree, but again, tonight I think they wanted to make sure they got out of there by 10 because they don't want to compete with themselves because of the UFC pay-per-view. So, either you get 5 matches, many of which, you know, they have time to sort of breathe, or you throw an extra match in there and you end up shortening most of the matches on the show. So take your pick. But that's why we got what we got tonight, where it felt like it was kind of going by even quicker than some of these 5-match shows normally do. Joseph says, I want to make a prediction. Jacob Fatu versus Bron Breakker will be a WrestleMania main event in the future. It's not much of a prediction. I think the answer is absolutely yes. And also, do you think Jeff Cobb will be one of the top stars in WWE in the future? Top stars, no. He will not be. He'll have a nice position on the card. He will not be a top star. Jonathan Bordeaux, rejoice. We are free from the Cena-Orton rivalry. Wouldn't be so sure just yet. Let's see how Saturday night's main event plays out before we make that prognostication. Larry Jester, why couldn't the chicken start his car at Olive Garden? He had Noki. I'll see myself out to watch what I missed while at work. I shall return. I don't know if we want you back after that joke. I don't know. I'll have to take a poll of the live chat and see what they think. Thank you, Larry. Ryan says, well enough is enough, and it's time for... well enough is enough, and it's time for a change. Thank you, Ryan. That reminds me, Owen Hart's birthday, I believe, was it earlier this week? I think May 7th. Owen was 34 when he passed away. And that was in 1999. How old would he have been? I'm doing math in my head, which is not good. Not good. 99, though. You know what? I think he would have been... Wow. I think he would have been 60. I think that might have been his 60th birthday. Wow. That's crazy. The antagonist. I know it's not much, but you're my WWE fodder since 2017. What's your favorite Seinfeld episode? Well, thank you for the $4.99 antagonist. The contest is my favorite episode. Joseph says, do you remember the Daredevil movie from 2003 starring Ben Affleck as the Daredevil? Remember it? Yes. Did I see it? No. Zachary Black, it has been a while, sir. My work headphones broke in the worst way possible. For the pay-per-view and the crowd, here is a clean 20 for Be the Booker. Much love. Thank you, Zach. I'm sorry about your headphones. Duff's Vids. I realized trees have no teeth. They're all bark and no bite. The man himself. Always has one. Always has one up his sleeve. Base Beerus. Backlash 2023 Puerto Rico really was special. Go back to Puerto Rico. I agree. They should go back to Puerto Rico very soon. That crowd was awesome. Joseph says, what is your top 10 favorite WCW themes? I don't know about 10, but Sting, Man Called Sting. Man Called Sting is one of them. DDP's is a Nirvana knockoff is another. NWO theme is on there. Chris Jericho had a, was it his first or second babyface theme? Like the Lionheart theme that he had. I enjoyed that. I think Rick Rude had a really good theme too when he was in WCW. I didn't like it as much as his WWF one though, but I'd put that one on there. I think those are some good choices. Oh, Wolfpack. Yeah, of course. Wolfpack. NWO Wolfpack. David Thering with the $21 super chat. Don't you start with the American males. Don't you start. Thumbs up show last night at HOG. Solid Monster. Gotta love moments like the one Indy Hartwell had. She won the women's title. For what it's worth, Cena attacked R-Truth on the post show and put him through the table. Another table bump, huh? I'll have to go back and watch that after. Yeah, it was a very cool moment last night. I was able to make the announcement that the right before the match that the women's championship would be decided in that match, and then to be able to present Indy with the belt when the match was over and kind of be a, you know, just be in the ring for that moment and to see, you know, how cool it was and what it meant for her. That was a very cool moment last night. Thank you, David. Holiday says, what are your thoughts on Charlotte winning the women's U.S. title? It'll keep her away from the women's WWE title picture and she'll elevate the belt. Well, I mean, if they come up with a good story for it, I don't know what they're going to do with her right now. It all depends on the story. I'm not going to rule it out. It'd be kind of like Becky holding the Intercontinental title, right? It's the same concept. The thing is, I wouldn't do it at the same time, though. So if you're going to have someone like Becky hold the IC, I don't want Charlotte holding the US on SmackDown. Like, you do one or the other, but don't do them at the same time. Zachary Black, did Pat get sent off in a gurney today? Jerry Lawler loves Gunther. No, not only did Pat not get sent out on a gurney, he was right back up on his feet when the match was over. He did not get murdered. Ross Lum and the female ref trying to pull Becky off Lyra had me eye rolling. I show more effort and strength when booking my prostate checkup. TMI, my friend. TMI. Egghead Show. J. John just gave R-Truth an AA through the table during the post-show media scrum. There's your Saturday night's main event match. That's what it sounds like. I mean, as soon as they announced Cena for that show, I figured, you know, he's got to be wrestling on that show. And you could do a rematch with Randy Orton, but they hyped this one up so much as the last time. I mean, it would just, it would feel fucked up for them to immediately go back on that.
Shut the fuck up. Fuck that tree.
It would feel fucked up for them to immediately go right back to it. And Cena and Truth is a match that works better as a TV match anyway. So I have no problem with that. Base Beerus, thank you for the two. El Masse, hey commissioner, can we get an HOG show in Puerto Rico someday? Much love. Hey, we're going to be expanding to some different places. So, never say never. All things are on the table right now. We got some fun announcements coming in the months ahead. So stay tuned. Going to be in Texas, actually, in a couple months. We got presence now in Orlando with a new school down there. I'm sure we're going to be running there soon. So, Bobby's World with a 21. Missed most of the PLE due to my son's college graduation dinner. Mechanical engineering, he says. Congrats to Christian at Texas Roadhouse. It was also Christian whose name I failed to mention when I shouted out his birthday weeks ago. Well, I'm sure that Christian maybe let you know about that. May have read you the riot act. I would have. If you forgot my name, forgot to mention my name, I would have. But congrats to Christian. That's very cool. Texas Roadhouse. I don't think I've ever eaten there before. I don't think so. Is Texas Roadhouse just exclusive to Texas, or is it a chain? Do they have that elsewhere? The Tonga Loa hater is with us. At least Tonga Loa wasn't there. He sucks. Fuck him, he says. My God. Tonga Loa superfan is not going to be happy about this. Libido Bell. The $10 super chat. Introducing my nephew, my nephews, 6 and 8 years old, to wrestling has been lots of fun. Been playing the 2K series and educating them of different promotions and eras while still keeping kayfabe and keeping tradition. That is cool. I always figured, like, if I had a son, what I might do. I'm a little sick in the head here. Is just like play old wrestling videos. Like try to do it in sequential order as if he was watching wrestling for the first time, but like from the 80s. Like start him out with that, you know? But I guess that would be wrong, you know? That'd be like if I were growing up as a wrestling fan and my dad would only allow me to watch tapes of like fucking Gorgeous George or something, you know? But I still say 80s wrestling is the best wrestling. Maybe I'm a little biased in that, but that's how I feel. Anthony. Ref bumps are overdone as fuck. Need a break from that. It does make the referees just look completely idiotic. Is it possible a wrestler has chemistry with any anyone? Yes. Some have chemistry, some don't. Some work well together, some don't. And what is your dream commentary team? We already had it. It was Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. We were living the dream there for a while. Base Beerus, thank you for the two. Duff's Vids, what do you call vegetarian lesbians? A scissor salad.
Oh, you suck.
Oh, man. Tonga Loa superfan. Speak of the devil. Look at this. I can't believe Tongaloa didn't return tonight in the main event a la Austin at Backlash 2000. Such a perfect opportunity missed. The reaction to his return would have eclipsed Austin's in 2000. It would have eclipsed Randy Orton tonight in St. Louis. Yuri says Jacob against Jeff Cobb is going to be insane when Fatu finally turns on the bloodline or they turn on him. Obvious smoke and mirrors for Cena in the main event. Yeah, I mean, that's how it has to be. It's just, at this point, you get what you get and you got to kind of work around his limitations. And I think they did the best they could with the tools that they had in their toolbox. Slinko says, do you think Fatu could end up being betrayed by Solo and Cobb? This could lead to Jeff Cobb versus Fatu and then Solo against Fatu. Great PLE. Buzzed. Cheers. Yeah, this would have been a good PLE to watch buzzed. Actually, they all would be, probably. Yeah, I mean, it could go either way. I mean, it could be Fatu being excommunicated. It could be Fatu breaking away on his own and then they attack. I mean, it works either way, but I hope that we do get Cobb and Fatu at some point. I'm sure we will. And I think it will be a banger of a match. It's going to be good. Hey, Kate, thank you for the 10. Kate Love. Just dropping some love, no message. We hit our secondary goal tonight, by the way. Thank you for that. 10 out of 10. So that means you're getting two Be the Bookers tonight. We'll make up for the one we didn't have last night because I wasn't here for SmackDown. Duff's Vids. What does a bilingual cat say? Woof. Thank you, Duff's. John with a 10. Imagine you get front row tickets to the first AEW-WWE crossover. The catch, every car you get into for 5 years has no AC, the windows don't roll down, but your front windshield does. Would you do it? No. Why would I do that? I'll just watch the show from home and drive my car exactly the way it is now. Thank you, John. Bobby's World with a $20 super chat. Benjamin Shelton. What an idiot Hogan is. Just rewatch Hogan and Rock and notice Hogan was selling his ribs a lot. Think Hogan tried the same thing on Rock that he did on Undertaker. If so, think Taker smarten Rock up. No, as I recall, I think Hogan had a house show match with Rikishi right before that and claimed that he hurt his ribs in the match with Rikishi. And it's like, I want to believe him, but I don't believe anything he says. He may well have made that entire thing up just to make himself look more like, oh, he overcame this injury that he had, right? Or maybe when he showed up at WrestleMania, if he didn't like what he was being told as far as what the plan was for the match, maybe he can use the injury as an excuse to back out of it. Like, that's the first thing I think of when I think of Hogan, because I don't trust him. That's the problem, you know, when you just tell so many lies, it just casts doubt on everything that you say.
Oh, you got me, brother. You got me, brother.
Aaron Tucker. What do Solomonster subs watch when they want to work out? Buff vids. Dry Chicken says Becky Lynch is going to make Lyra Valkyria bleed. I love Lyra, but she needs dirt, mud, and blood on her. Like a Polish shoe. Dirty it. Oh, I think... I think he meant polish. I think he meant polished shoe. My God, dude, I read it exactly the way it was written. I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure what that is. Like, what is a what is a Polish shoe? Anyway, I'm creating my own jokes here. Thank you, Dried Chicken. Yes, no, I realize what he said now, but the way it was written. Let's move on. Duff's Vids. Why did Pac-Man call, or what did Pac-Man? What did Pac-Man call his chocolate factory? Willy Wonka, Wonka, Wonka. Man. Duff's Vids. Always going in the dirt. Always going to the gutter. Craig McLaughlin is with us, and Craig says, 7 out of 10 show, better than I expected. I guess I can be entertained by about anything that gets my mind off the pain of a toothache or abscess. Ouch. Yeah, that's not good. Catch the rest of your show tomorrow. My best to you. Thank you, Craig. Well, hopefully that will pass quickly, because that is not fun. Shout out to Loves Cats in the chat. Thank you. Moore says, did you watch Maven's new AEW video? It was a fun watch. I didn't see the whole video. I did see the one. I saw one clip of him talking to Tony Khan, and then there was a clip of him interacting with Daniel Garcia. But there's a lot I have to catch up on from the last few days. I've been very, very busy. Devin says, buy or sell, post-match interviews or post-show media scrums? Post-match interviews. Post-match interviews, post-match interviews, post-match interviews. Richie, did you know John Cena attacked R-Truth after Backlash? I do now. Duff's Vids, what did Tennessee? The same thing as Arkansas. What did Tennessee? The same thing as Arkansas. Not your best work. Holiday says, predicting Drew wins Money in the Bank and Cody beats Cena at SummerSlam. Then Drew cashes in on Cody, setting up a feud in late 2025. Orton costs Cody equals WrestleMania feud. Well, it's got to be one or the other. But then why would Orton cost Cody? There's got to be a reason. There's got to be an explanation. They have to do something to set that up. But if you can tell that story, that's a story I would like to see play out. Base Beer says, no Fiend. No Fiend tonight. That's good. Also, Randy hit like 10 finishers, 2 FUs include. Yeah, he did. He hit not only his own finisher, but he hit the other guy's finish too. Oh, I see. Okay. Tennis sees what Arkan saw. Oh, God. How did I not get that one? I don't know. Maybe because I'm running on like 3.5 hours sleep for the last 2 days. Maybe that's why. BW says, Cena AA'd R-Truth at the press conference tonight. So I'm told. Dry Chicken, John Cena's heel character gives off Anakin Skywalker vibes during his run. King Nader, thank you for the 25. Much appreciated. Dry Chicken, let me tell you how John Cena can get more heat, brother. John Cena goes after Joe Hendry and beats him up so badly. Anger the wrestling community more. Base Beer is Jericho top 50 of all time. Everyone's list is going to be different. But yes, I believe he is. Jeremy says, do you think Punk ever goes back to This Fire Burns? No. Chris Ludek with the 12. The Daredevil movie with Ben Affleck was awful, but the Daredevil series with Charlie Cox is GOAT. Also, buy or sell, wasn't, the guy who played Shane on The Walking Dead, Kurt Angle's brother-in-law, fuck, his name just popped out of my head, didn't he play Punisher in either a movie or a TV series? I thought he did. Chris, though, says also buy or sell In Your House, Canadian Stampede, or Money in the Bank 2011. Those are two of the best shows that the company has ever done. So you've put me in a very difficult position here. But I have to go... Oh, man, I don't know. You know, that's tough. I'm going to go Money in the Bank. I'll go Money in the Bank 2011. Two great shows, though. John Bernthal, thank you, yes. Isn't John Bernthal is the Punisher, I thought. Dark Effect with 20. With Jeff Cobb debuting tonight and being a bit older, what other wrestlers who have gotten late starts to their career in WWE do you think have seen the most success? For me, it's names like Batista and DDP in WCW. DDP and WCW for sure. Batista would have been my pick. I think Batista was like 40, right? When he won his first world title, he may have been 40. So, I mean, he would have been my first pick. In terms of like major success. Ah, man. I don't know. All the guys I'm thinking of right now, when they first had major success, were not that old. They were still wrestling when they were very old, but they were not that old initially, so... I don't know. I'd have to think about that. Roderick says AJ Styles. How old was... Yeah, I guess AJ. When AJ came to the company, how old was he? He's already been there for 9 years. So, I mean, when AJ got there, was he that old? I mean, maybe. I didn't really look at him as an old man. Say the same thing about Samoa Joe, I guess. But Joe never attained that level of success that I feel he should have had there. Number one, Homo Sapien, says, I predict Omos will show up and save Jacob Fatu from Solo and Jeff Cobb. Also, did you hear about the two guys who stole a calendar? They both got 6 months. That's pretty good. David, thank you for the 20. David Thiering, always coming in with the support. AJ was 39 in 2016. See, he's 50 in a year. There's no way. LA Knights, of course, LA Knight, yeah. Maddie says LA Knight. That's a good one. Dry Chicken. Alexa Bliss needs to spread dark magic on Charlotte. Take her to the Hardy compound and baptize her into the lake of reincarnation. She goes into the lake as Charlotte Flair. She comes out of the lake as Medusa. I like it. Dried Chicken says, Hail Charlotte Flair, the wicked queen of nature. Now, I like her going into the lake better and then coming out as Medusa. Colin C. Solid Monster, can you give me a quick birthday shout out? And have a great night. Colin with 16 months of channel membership. Happy birthday, Colin. I don't know how old you are, but you're old enough to be a channel member. Thank you, Colin. Jeremy Rose, Patch should have gotten destroyed by Gunther. Him hulking up and lasting 20 minutes was dumb to me. Well, it was 14 minutes, but yes, it should not have gone that long. Alexis, Graham got me hooked on your live streams, LOL. Yeah, shout out to Graham. Mr. Mermina, hey Alexis, thank you. I'm glad he got you hooked on my podcast. Good. Yeah, many people listen to my podcasts and their significant other is not hooked on wrestling podcasts. They probably hate my guts. Yuri says, random thought, is both Bronson and Cobb bloodline tied? Or does that lead to something when Bronson is back? Feel like Bronson would have that spot if he was not hurt. I don't know what the plan was for Bronson Reed, but him, those few weeks that he was there with the bloodline, it just felt right. You know, it felt like a good fit. So I don't know if they would have kept him in there or not. A few more months. He's not, I haven't heard anything about him being medically cleared anytime yet. I'm hoping that, I mean, I don't even know if he'll be back in time for SummerSlam, honestly. I mean, that was a pretty gnarly injury, but it would be nice to get him back by like midsummer. See where he, or even which roster he ends up on. EJ says, who felt more out of place in WCW, Mean Gene or Bobby Heenan? I feel like Gene should have been a WWE lifer, but I can't picture him during the Attitude Era. Honestly, I felt like they were both out of place, but more so Heenan. Like, of the two, it was definitely Heenan. The Heenan that we got in WCW was nothing like the Heenan we got in WWE. The Winston Slip, what's your favorite SmackDown moment and match? Moment is probably the first ring collapse with Brock and Big Show. As far as match, I don't know. There's been a lot of great SmackDown matches over the years. You know, Angle and Brock in that Iron Man match is certainly one of them. I don't know if that was the best. But moment, I have to go with that first ring collapse. I mean, it's been done multiple times since then. But that really was a holy shit moment. First time that ever happened. BW, are we getting two Dark Side of the Ring reviews this Sunday? You're getting no Dark Side of the Ring reviews this Sunday because I have not had time to put any notes together. I was out of town. I was just ridiculously busy. I'm all caught up on the episodes. But I will do a review for the Eddie Gilbert one. I'll do one for, I mean, how could I not do one for Billy Jack Haynes? I've talked about him before. He's quite the character. But I don't know when. They'll probably, my hope is that, you know, they'll go up maybe even on YouTube first. You know, even if I include them in the show after the fact. But unfortunately, there will be none tomorrow. Base beer is Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th? Friday the 13th. I've seen some of the Freddy movies, but I was never a Freddy guy. I was a Jason guy. When I saw Halloween then for the first time, I became a Michael guy. So for me, it's Michael and then Jason. John, you get to witness Sting against The Undertaker, both in their prime. The catch. For 2 years, every trash can in your home fills up 75% faster than usual. What is with these scenarios here? Again, the answer is no. I was not one of those people that was dying to see Sting and The Undertaker. It would have been a cool match with them in their prime, but not if I have to buy more garbage bags. Fuck that. Base beer is Kevin Hart should be in Travis's place. Rock's BFF. Yeah, but then everything would be turned into comedy. It just becomes a joke at that point. And favorite Raw and SmackDown theme songs? The original ones. The original ones. The ones that really had no lyrics at all. Navy, was there any video game that made you melt down and slam your controller on the floor? Mine was Tecmo World Wrestling on the NES. Yeah, I mean, there were several games. It wasn't any one game. When things didn't go my way, I could get violent. That's why I don't really play games as much anymore. I didn't take it well. What can I say? Thank you for the messages. Some good stuff in there. We are currently up to 722 likes. That's what I like to see. You see what I did there? Thank you for the likes and the super chats. Now, my reward to you is not one, but two installments of Be the Booker. Base Beer says Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. Mortal Kombat.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
All right, we get two rounds. Make up for the one we didn't get last night. If you're new here, it's a little fun thing we do here at the end of these streams when we hit certain targets, certain goals. I've put together something here. It's a randomizer. Tons of names. Male, female, tag teams. Sometimes we do stipulations. So here, for example, we have Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi. Oh, man, this is like prime Ibushi here. I miss this Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega as tag team partners. That's a hell of a team right there. Taking on Edge and Christian. Holy shit. You know what's wild about that? That is a match that we very well could get in AEW. And it would not be nearly as good as it would have been if both these teams were in their physical primes. Imagine prime Edge and Christian against prime Kenny and Kota. What a fucking amazing match that would have been. Man, Super Bell. Yeah, I have to have like a Super Bell button that just blows everybody's eardrums out. All right, women's match now. We begin with Lana. Oh my God. God. I don't think it's possible for me to have booked a worse match. If, like, usually it's one or the other, but to get them both. Oh my God. Oh, Lana and Rosa Mendez. I mean, that is, just, I'm speechless. Like, I don't know what that would look like. I don't know what that is. Super buzzer. I have to have a buzzer. I have to have an actual buzzer here. I need a super buzzer. I need a super bell and a super buzzer. And now we move on to our main event. We try to cleanse the palate from that awful match. Liv Morgan gives you her room key. Now pick a stipulation. I didn't see her at my hotel last night. But they had a live band in the lobby playing music when I got back from the show. Blasting away into the wee hours of the night. Well, I guess we have to pick a stipulation then for our main event. Those are the rules. Our main event is going to be an I Quit match, as we see in the background of this image here. John Cena against Randy Orton. How about that? Very appropriate. That's just how many matches they've had. It's not like, oh my God, you landed on an image of John Cena and Randy Orton. It's like, no, they've had that many matches. It's not that rare. All right, but it's going to be an I Quit match. Jay Lethal, the former Ring of Honor world champion, is in our main event. And he is going to be doing battle with who? With Seth Rollins in an I Quit match. Basically, Tyler Black here against Jay Lethal. That could have been a Ring of Honor main event. Maybe it was. Did they overlap? I don't know now if they did. I think they did in Ring of Honor. I don't know. But as I said, you get two rounds to be the booker. So now we get to do it all over again. But this time, every match is going to have a stipulation. That would be good, right? That would be a good match. Not Lana and Rosa Mendez. Seth Rollins and Jay Lethal. Okay, so our first match is going to be a tag team barbed wire steel cage match. Barbed wire steel cage match. That's what we are heading into here. With Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn as one team. Didn't they have barbed wire in their last match against each other? Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, tag team steel cage barbed wire match against the Toxic Turtles. Do not adjust your screens. This was a real team. Not for very long, but this was a real team at one point in WWE. I believe Gilbert is under one of those costumes. And the reason I gave this the bell is because if you say that you would not pay money to see Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn wrestle a couple of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle knockoffs in a steel cage barbed wire match, I don't believe you. You're lying to me. That would be a great match. You mean to tell me you wouldn't want to see these turtles sliced and diced? You wouldn't be sports entertained by that? Our women's match is going to be an APA invitational. We just had one of these last week. An APA invitational. Although I don't think we've ever had a women's APA invitational. So this is a little bit different. As long as we don't land on Lana and Rosa Mendez again, I think we'll be okay. Willow Nightingale. See, now I think Willow would actually do very well. She had that match. Was it All Out last year with Chris Statlander? What was the stipulation again? They beat the hell out of each other. Willow would do very well in an APA invitational. And she will be taking on Natalia. I think they would do well. So I'll have to go back and see the match that Natty had with Miyu in Bloodsport. And now our co-main event of the evening. This is what we will end on. We have to end on a high note with this main event. And it's going to be another... Okay, we can't do that. No. We're not doing the same stipulation in the same round of Be the Booker. Can't do that. But maybe we should have. Because now we have landed on Eye for an Eye. And now I regret that we did not go with the same stipulation. But that's what happens sometimes. Kurt Angle in one half of our Eye for an Eye main event. Now this I like. Kurt Angle, he might lose an eye. That's what she said. You're going to lose an eye with that thing. Put that thing away. Kurt Angle against the British Bulldog. I love this image. The British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, Eye for an Eye. What is that face that he is making in this image? I don't know. Then you got poor Andre. Could barely move. You see Andre in the background there? With his cane. This had to be 91. Andre was... he was not in good shape. But there you have it. Two rounds of Be the Booker. Oh, clean sweep. You're right. No, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry. How did I not realize that? We had a clean... hold on a second. I stand corrected. We had a clean sweep, and so therefore, we have to play the anthem. Thank you for reminding me. You almost let me forget. You know, they happen so rarely that I have to make sure I play the sound, or else it doesn't count. We have Duff's Vids. Says, which state has the most streets? Rhode Island. Very good. Yuri, Kenny and Kota against ENC, best random matchup in a while. It is quite great, isn't it? I mean, it's just one of those matches that if you take from one generation and then you blend it with another, what kind of like fantasy matchups could you come up with? That one would have to be on there. Duff's Vid, Sundays are a little sad at the end, but the day before is a sadder day. Cameron Spencer, I've been meaning to ask you, What are your three favorite great Khali matches? Well, I'll work on that, Cameron, and I'll get back to you. Base Beer says Hellraiser or Final Destination. Final Destination. It's never really a pinhead guy. I know a few pinheads, but not really a pinhead guy. Isn't there a new Final? I think I just saw a commercial for a new Final Destination. How many movies? I mean, I know there have been at least 10 Saw movies, maybe 11, but like how many Final Destinations have there been? My God. They've got to be up in the double digits by this point. That Lana and Rosa Mendez match was like a Final Destination. That should have been the stipulation for that match. Final Destination, but you can't avoid it. You can't avoid fate. You just have to learn to accept it. Six of them, there have been six or seven Final Destination movies. All right, so they'll hit 10 at some point. Guaranteed they'll hit 10. It's called Bloodlines, right? Final Destination Bloodlines. It's like the Bloodline. It will never end. It just goes on and on and on. Thank you guys for a great stream here tonight. We got Power Spying Games coming in with one last super check. You giving KO and Sammy against the Turtles the bell is like when you gave Booker T and Big Money Meltzer the bell. I'm sorry, I have no recollection of that. I have no recollection of that. And Base Beerus, Kurt Angle had three eyes. And then he has three eye emojis. Santiago with the $4.99. I'm looking forward to the short Truth program. Cena was actually the reason Truth lost his mind in 2011. Will this lead to Truth regaining his sanity? Yeah, that's right. He came out there. They had that match at Capital Punishment, wasn't it? That one pay-per-view they did? Well, look, I mean, if they're going to do it, I would love to have some callbacks, but we'll see. They're doing it on Saturday night's main event. It's coming up in a few weeks, and I don't know. Is Cena scheduled for any dates between now and then? Has he, I mean, I know there were dates that came out a while ago. I don't remember how many, if any, dates between Backlash and Saturday night's main event he's scheduled for. So I don't know how many times we're even going to get him on TV between now and then. I don't know. Maddie says, Solo, how long or how did it feel to raise Indy's arm up when she won? It felt great because it was a great moment for her to be crowned champion on a night where nobody was expecting it. All of a sudden, we have a brand new women's champion. She was all smiles. I was very happy for her. It was a great moment. You can watch it on Triller TV Plus. Her and Yamasha, I had a ringside seat for it. Because after I came out to make the announcement about the title being vacated, I sat at ringside. I wanted a ringside seat with that belt and watch the match. And every kick, I mean, Miyu, those kicks are deadly that she throws. Every kick, every strike, every forearm, I could hear it. So, really good stuff. I'm going to read you a Bender McSimpson super chat that I just noticed. Here's some coin for a super bell. Now I want to see Edge and Christian, Coda and Kenny badly. Thanks. Well, I'm sure you could do it in the video game, no? You could probably book it in there. This is why we do Be the Booker. I get you thinking about matches that you probably never even thought of. That's the beauty of it. Tomorrow is episode 912, the Mother's Day edition of the Sound Off. We'll be talking more Backlash and the Backlash fallout. And then some other news and notes. I'm going to do what I can do. There's some stuff like the Dark Side of the Ring stuff that's going to have to wait. I just didn't have time this week to dive into it the way I wanted to, but that's how it goes sometimes. But yes, there will be a new podcast tomorrow, so keep an eye out for that. Happy early Mother's Day to all the moms out there celebrating. I hope you enjoy your day. Thank you for spending your time with me here for this Backlash review, and I will see you back here live on Monday night for the Raw post show and tomorrow for episode 912 of The Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.